Wolf, get away from those sheep.
Bollocks.
You're listening to the Wolf and the Shepherd podcast, broadcasting from Fort Worth in the great state of Texas. Now, get ready for this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd.
Welcome to this episode of the Wolf and the Shepherd. Today, we have with us AJ from the AJ podcast. AJ, glad you could join us today.
Yeah, thanks. I'm very excited to be here.
So, AJ, we wanted to discuss our geographical disparity today, that being you living in New York and us living in Texas. I'm sure you have a whole plethora of news stories up there about what life is like in Texas with us riding our horses absolutely everywhere.
Right. And we yeah. all, of course, own horses.
Yeah.
We take them to the grocery store. Yeah. We take them to Whataburger. Mm. We all have ranches.
Yeah.
And we all have pickup trucks.
Yeah.
Yes.
And our ARs are over there in the corner, just in case, you know. Yes.
Makes sense.
Somebody comes
I
to the door.
I hear even your horses have ARs.
That's true.
Is that yeah.
true?
Mounted.
That is, yes. Yeah. Mounted well, it depends on what kind of horse you have, though.
Yeah.
Because mine has a shotgun.
Yeah.
I have a cheaper model. Oh, you have
one of the more classic ones.
Yeah, yeah, I have a cheaper model. I yeah. can't afford the fancy one.
Mine's like one of those Roman horses. It's just got lots of sharp bits off of it. Oh. You know, and it just brushes up against other things and injures it by close contact.
Yeah, but the reason you did that is because you like the chariot.
Yeah, I've always thought
I don't get the chariot thing. Why you want a chariot and you don't just ride the horse like I do?
It's better for your groceries. You know, when you're in the store, you can pick up more stuff. You can go to Costco. Just have more space.
You yeah. do spend a lot of time at Costco.
I treat the chariot as a love seat, mainly.
Yeah.
You know,
it works that way.
Yeah. Give tourists a ride, you know, up and down the dirt track, which is our main road.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
Just before the sheriff comes out to hang somebody in the afternoon.
The know? Only problem is when we have the horse races right down the middle of the street. I mean, that is kind of a traffic jam issue.
Yeah.
But you just got to plan your grocery shopping yeah. ahead of time.
Yeah, you got to kind of put off the cattle rustling for an hour and just, you know,
go with the flow. That's pretty much what we hear up in New York. That confirms everything I've heard about Texas.
It's pretty accurate, except add on that we have the internet, and that's like...
Oh, is that what this fancy deal
you
is?
Guys have where the we internet?
Can yeah.
talk through the TV to them?
Yeah, well, we're talking through the TV. That's how the internet works. There's a special, you know, hole in the back of it.
Oh, you that's how it works.
Stick a lead in it, and it connects you to the internet.
So that's why we don't have to put it on channel 3 anymore.
Yeah.
Because used to, you had to always put it on channel 3 to do anything but watch the weather.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, he taught me something new today.
Yeah. So what's life like up there in New York at the moment? Because almost every single news article we read at the moment is centered on New York and mainly around Manhattan and... you know, the other boroughs and the crime that's going on. Is that particularly realistic or are they just picking and choosing the stories that...
So I think apparently it's realistic in terms of statistics. My daily life hasn't changed. I think it's more that what happened is you had a pandemic where people kind of stopped going out. And then now that they're starting going out again, they're realizing how much of a shithole they've been living in the whole time. So it's more like... they've been closing their eyes for 2 years. And then when they look at it again, they're like, holy shit, this is a third world country with a lot of money.
Well, I'm sure the homeless people already had a heads up. It wasn't utopia.
Yes, they did. They had a heads up. But to be honest, I don't think it has changed that much. It's just like when you've been away and a lot of people, you know, they moved away to be in the countryside and stuff. And now they're coming back and there are so many rats in the subway. Everybody's asking you for money. Like fairly often you're like spat on by a homeless dude who's looking aggressively at you. There's like a general feeling of, wait a minute, this is like the greatest city in the world, New York, right? Like, no, it's really a third world country with a lot of money. And if you have a lot of money, or if you work for like an expensive, like a rich, you know, corporation, you can kind of get away from it. But as soon as you go to the underground or as soon as you kind of look around, you realize like, no, this is a fucking shithole.
Well, hang on a second. I'm not surprised though. I thought that's what New York was, like giant rats that steal your pizza and lots of homeless people. So everybody's just now all of a sudden figuring that out. Like New Yorkers are just now figuring that out.
Yeah, I know. I think it had its charm. And I personally, I still find it like super charming in a way, but I'm also getting kind of tired of it as I get older. It's like, okay, you know, how long can you do that. And also there's just a general atmosphere with COVID that's changed where, you know, there's still like a lot of people wearing masks. There's still a lot of people who are kind of defensive and scared. So before, at least, like, people were kind of, you know, this is shitty, but we're in it together. Now this is so, like, the culture has become so individualistic where, like, everyone's kind of like watching other people, judging other people for not wearing masks. Like, people are angry. There's like a general feeling of uneasiness. And I'm not just saying that. I really like pick up on subtle things like that. And I really feel like there's a general feeling of discontentment, but people don't know why. And so I think it's true that people are moving to Texas because my family wants to move to Texas.
I'm not lying when I'm telling you this story. And if we could figure out how to use our technology, I would share this picture. But 2 days ago, and like I said, I'm not making this up. And after the show, I will text you the picture, AJ. Not making this up. I'm in the car yesterday, and I look up in my rearview mirror, and there's a woman by herself in the car talking, you know, on a hands-free phone or whatever, wearing a mask. I haven't seen anybody wear a mask in so long in Texas. And I look up in the rearview mirror and I see this and I'm like, I have to take a picture. So I held my phone up to the rearview mirror and took the picture. And you can see her, you know, she's kind of animated with her hands. You can tell she's talking, right? So take the picture, put the phone down and everything. Light turns green, start to pull away. New York license plate. I am not making that up. Yeah. It was a New York license plate because I was still just so baffled to see somebody, A, wearing a mask, but B, wearing a mask in a car. Then I saw the New York license plate, and I'm like, okay, I get it now. I get it now.
I mean, in the grocery stores a couple of times a week, you'll see a few people wearing masks, but it tends to be like really old people than that.
The exception to the rule.
Yeah.
It's more bizarre to see it than not see it. When you see one, it's like seeing a silver donkey walk down the road. Right. It's like, wow, you know, you don't see one of those every day.
But it's been like that here probably, I don't know, maybe for about a year. I mean, it got surprising when people wore masks when you went to a store or something about a year ago, I think.
I think you're right. I think it's been about a year.
People got tired of it last summer. They just suddenly decided, forget the masks, we're not wearing them anymore. And they just basically ignored anything. Not that we really had any mandates or anything in place because they said it was illegal. So it's private stores and everything could still say, hey, you need to wear a mask to come in, but there was no general mask mandates or anything, so we just didn't bother with it. I mean,
to be quite honest with you, though, it almost made it a little more confusing because, like, remember we went somewhere and it was like, do we need a mask? I don't know. Can you see the sign over there? Does it say mask optional, mask required? I don't know. Well, grab it anyway, and then we'll read the sign because we're so old we couldn't see it from the distance, and then you have to read the sign. Okay. Yeah, they're asking you to wear a mask, or wait, no, they're just saying it's optional. And then you put it back in your pocket. It was a giant pain, to be honest.
My only question is, did your horse have to wear the mask as well, or is it just you?
Yes.
No. Gotcha.
Horses had to be masked up. For cosmetics, they did.
Were expensive masks, remember?
I mean, I just use the thing, the hay feeder thing. You know, the mask you normally put over the face with the hay in it? I just use that, but there's no hay
bag.
In it.
Yeah, that's the oat bag.
Yeah, just pull it tighter. Don't put any oats in it.
I wish you would have told me about that. I could have saved a lot of money.
Yeah, the unfortunate asphyxiation issues. So you got to loosen it like every, you know, half a mile so the horse doesn't like fall over. But
your horse didn't get sick by doing that, did he?
Well, I don't know if it did. It went in the mask, so.
Well, no, I just mean like in general of wearing that oat bag all the time.
Oh, I can't tell with him.
Oh, okay.
He's lost it.
Oh. What is it with your animals just losing their minds?
I think it's the varied diet, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, you're not very good.
I don't think some of the normal kind of chemicals they put in processed foods are really meant to be introduced into the food chain for horses.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
But you're nicer to your horse, though. You actually get him, like, the food and everything. Mine just eats the grass in the backyard.
Well, yeah.
That's why my backyard looks terrible.
Well, yeah, but we have people who do the lawns, so he's got nothing left to eat.
Oh, man, that's a good point.
Yeah. But that's another thing, actually. When I used to live in Connecticut for about three and a half months back in 1999. I was just waiting for the year 2000 so I could go to a good party, so I figured Manhattan would be good. Instead, I went up to Canada instead, to Montreal.
That's the opposite direction, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, okay.
And I remember I used to go into New York, well, into Manhattan probably about twice a week, once for work and once just at the weekends, just to, you mm-hmm. know, do something. And, you know, I remember back then, I mean, it was really, really safe. And, well, I say really safe. I mean, if you went places you shouldn't go, obviously, you're going to have trouble.
Yeah, I mean, that's always
true. But, I mean, you could walk down the main tourist areas, go on the subway, you know, you'd be safe in Grand Central. And, you know, I never saw any crime whatsoever. But, you know, I've had friends who have visited recently, and they said there's just a general feeling of uneasiness. Even if you don't feel something, it's like you're looking over your shoulder.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, it used to be something which was reserved for, you know, the evening or night hours.
You mean
where
that whole
dark.
Like you feel like somebody's watching
you
feeling?
Mm-hmm. But even in a crowded place, it's like, you know, like the Matrix where they said you couldn't tell who's who within the Matrix, you know, when he's walking mm-hmm. down that street. And he said, you know, it's
when he sees the chick in the red
dress. Yeah, and then that guy's pointing that gun at him. Explain the feelings like that, that you're not sure who the person is. They could be somebody who looks well-dressed. It could be a homeless person. You just don't know where the trouble's going to come from. And it's just put, you know, everybody on edge. And when you ride on the, you know, subway, there's this general uneasy feeling with everybody looking around. People would normally, you know, talk and play their music. But now everybody's so offended on being the trigger to make somebody else kick off.
No, I can see that.
Yeah, I think it's not that bad, but I would say it is just like a general feeling of it's just very aggressive. And I think it's always been like that, but I think it's more aggressive now, and particularly like with COVID, because people are not interacting as much on the subway. Now they're just looking at each other and kind of waiting for somebody to make the first move. And, you know, it's like, it's usually fine, but sometimes you get like a big homeless dude just walk in and he's like wearing sunglasses and he's like starting to yell shit, like random shit, like really crazy shit. He's just like, and then you're like, oh my God, he's going to swing for me. And so, and what is good about living in New York is it teaches you to be calm, I think, where like that thing is happening and it's just like, oh no, it's fine, it's just Monday morning, right? And like he walks past you and he's like just swinging in the air, and like you just don't look at him. You, and most of the time, honestly, if you don't look at them, nothing happens. You just got to be ready, I guess. But it's just like it teaches you to be comfortable with something that's like genuinely frightening.
Do you almost not believe him when he says living in New York teaches you to be calm? I mean, sitting here in Texas, you get this picture of a New Yorker that's all like uptight and everything's in a hurry and everything. Yeah. I just can't picture the calm thing, man.
I think it's because they don't learn to be calm. You know, it's like I think there are two ways to react to stress, right? Like either something super stressful and it traumatizes you and then you like end up giving off even more of that energy, or it's like so stressful that you're like, okay, I need to reset like what is stressful to me. So you kind of lower the bar.
Now, are you allowed to like carry a knife around or anything? So I know you're not allowed guns generally speaking there, but are you allowed to carry like a knife or anything, or is that considered an offensive weapon as well?
Yeah, I think it's also considered like a not so good thing. Usually the problem is even if a law is okay, right, in New York, like the judge is going to be the one deciding it.
Man.
And judges are not very like pro self-defense. Like you guys have the stand your ground law in Texas, mm-hmm. for example, where like if somebody comes at you, wherever you are, you can defend yourself. In New York, there's only the castle doctrine, which means I can only do that if I'm at my house.
Yeah.
And even then, that's just a doctrine, right? Like if I shoot somebody coming to my house, the judge is going to make me, like the burden of proof is going to be on my end to prove that I really needed to shoot the guy, which by the way, I think is fair. Like, you know, in the law, it says like, for example, you can't invite someone into your house and then shoot them because they, you know, like you, there are basic rules for what constitutes self-defense.
Oh, I think we're allowed to do that, aren't we?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. As long as they're on your property, you can basically shoot them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, remember in Texas, they like it. And I know you've seen this. You can order for free the like guide for open carry. Like the state came out and said, hey, you know, you don't need a CHL anymore. Now you can open carry, concealed carry, whatever. Don't need a permit. By the way, we prepared this handy guide of, you know, how to carry your gun and where to use your gun and all that stuff. And it's free of charge. You know, click here to download. Yeah. So two completely different states.
But I mean, pretty much everybody, you know, carries a knife. But it's not for self-defense. It's just because it's useful. You know, it's like carrying a pair of scissors or pair of pliers around, you know.
To clean your horse's teeth, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Texans carry knives around. I mean, you know, even middle school kids, you know, they'll have a knife, but it's not because they're trying to stab each other. It's just because they might need to cut something later on, you know, cut a cardboard box and so.
Well, yeah, we get so many Amazon packages that, yeah, you can almost wear a knife out.
It's normal, though. That was, that's like, that's a normal thing. And I think there's just something where we're like, as civilization progresses, and I don't mean that like progress in, as in better, because I progress more as like change. Length of time. Yeah, I think like it becomes disconnected from kind of the things that made it, you know? And so I think in Texas, you guys are just more rooted in like, okay, what is it that made America successful? It's like, well, it's being self-reliant, and being having a knife is a huge symbol of self-reliance. It's self-defense, but you can also cut stuff. It's like a survival thing. Whereas in New York, we're like, we live in something that resembles nothing of what like America is supposed to be, apart from a financial center and like the power. There's nothing American, and there's sense of like the values in New York. It's just like a big melting pot of people who are there to make money. Like, that's not the American dream. You know, there was more to money than the American dream.
Which is kind of ironic, because at one point New York was the capital of the country.
Yeah.
I mean, a long, long time ago, granted, but at one point it was.
Well, I think the problem is whenever you have a melting pot, it's always an experiment, and the experiment is never going to go perfectly. You're going to have some good things and some bad things, but unfortunately, you know, once you put a recipe together, you can't take the individual ingredients out of the equation, which are actually causing the issue. And I think too many of the politicians in New York, you know, have their own agendas, and it's like, screw everybody else's agenda. You know, I'm going to focus on this. I want to get this passed.
Money.
And outside of my precinct, I don't really care who it affects. It's not for them. It's for the people in my precinct. And then you find that half the time people run on promises where there was never any money to fulfill what it was they promised anyway. And then they just blame the finances rather than the fact that they never really intended to do anything anyway, because it's always easy to blame a lack of funds on your lack of action, you know. And New York and California are very similar in that respect, in that they'll do a project, all the money will be used up in the research part, and then it will never come to fruition.
Yeah, and the funny thing I just saw recently, I was in the Bronx, and I saw like a big sign. It said, elect, you know, the names of the people from the Democratic Party. It was like for local election. And the slogan was like, time for change. And I just laughed. I was like, this county's been Democratic for like the past 50 years. What do you mean time for change?
It's probably talking about daylight savings time, about making it permanent. Yeah. Time for change.
So once again, though, they did a half-assed job there, because it passed one side of the government, but not the other side. Mm. And now the other side saying, well, we're not going to vote for it. You know, and that seems to be the way all of these changes die. You know, like Congress is sitting there and the House will pass something, then it never passes the Senate, or vice versa.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we're looking at on that daylight savings time deal.
Yeah. I mean, and now it has become so tribal that even if one side does agree somewhat, or even in full, with a proposal by the other side to keep your tribe intact, you tend to vote against something, even if it's in your own self-interest. And, you know, I think the Democrats have become masters at mixing in things that everybody wants with stuff that nobody wants, highlighting the part that everybody wants, then claiming that the Republicans are against this thing that everybody wants, when in reality, the Republicans are against the thing which was attached to it, which nobody wants. But, you know, when the media highlights, you know, kind of like, oh, Republicans want all babies to die through lack of medical care. And it's, no, it's kind of, you attached it to a bill which said domestic terrorists can get released within 6 months. That's what we don't agree with. It's not about protecting the babies. It's just separate these bills and we'll vote on the thing that everybody agrees with.
Right.
But, you know, that's become a dirty part of politics, and you can't pretend that Republicans don't do the same thing, because they do.
And exactly. And the problem is the Republican Party is doing the exact same thing. And the thing is, on both sides, it's the people that end up suffering, right? Republicans are doing fine. Democrats are doing fine. Like, they just keep interchanging power and the same shit happens. Like, the real people who are suffering are, you know, not to victimize yourselves, but it's like people like you and me, right? Who are just like, hey, what the fuck? Like, do something, right? And so I think it's very discouraging, but at the same time, I guess this goes into something I've been working on. I think there's a lot of hope if we're able to kind of pool resources together as individuals and kind of decide like, okay, you know, if that's the way the mainstream is going to deal with our issues, how about we just do it ourselves, right? Like grassroots efforts through entrepreneurship, through like community building. There are ways where you can unite people instead of always dividing them, where you can unite them around stuff where everybody wants it. I don't think there's a big difference between what, I mean, apart from the extreme people at the core, I think we all kind of want the same thing. We just have different names for it, right? But like we want to be left alone when we feel like somebody's encroaching too much on our privacy. We want to have money and like good economic prospects. We want to have safety. Like, you know, these are not like crazy things. It's not like humans are so different. We all kind of want the same thing. And I think we've just been led to like be so opposite when in fact we probably would agree on a lot if we just kind of could talk about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I mean, to me, it's like we assume that everybody wants to eat, right? But people have different methods of getting that food. Some people think it's okay to steal that food. Some people mm-hmm. feel, you know, they have a moral responsibility to work
yeah.
and buy that food and, you know, get that food through, you know, legal means. So, you know, concentrating on the goal is one thing. It's just the method to get there. And, you know, some methods are going to piss people off and we don't want to adopt them. I mean, like, you know, if you look at the approach to law and order in some democratic run cities, we're not going to replicate that here. We're not going to throw criminals back on the streets 12 hours after they've been arrested for, you know, a serious assault. They're going to be locked up and probably never see the light of day for 15 years in Texas. We don't play that, you know, catch and release thing for people who are a danger to public. And so I'm sure New Yorkers want law and order, but, you know, there's a huge proportion of them who have this bleeding heart liberalism who feel that part of the solution is to give them a big hug rather than incarcerate them and, you know, perhaps go through alternate correction issues. I know the prison service isn't perfect by any means, but if I've got the choice between locking somebody up who's a danger and putting somebody kind of like out on day release who still isn't remorseful for something they've done, then for us here, that's a no-brainer. You keep them locked up.
Yeah, but yeah, what about, and then we can talk about solutions like, well, okay, if they need some kind of therapy and stuff, but it's still better out of the two extremes. I agree, it's still better to have law and order. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, but in kind of a nice segue there, you're talking about actual enforcing the law, right? We've seen it taken one step further with not even enforcing the law with the whole shoplifting deal, right? Where, oh, well, we're not going to prosecute if you steal less than whatever it is, $950 in California. It's like, okay, well, we really didn't want to get behind the whole catch and release thing, but now you're not even going to arrest them. You're just going to let them do whatever. Mm. Like, what's next? And I've always said, why did we decide that $950 or whatever that amount is? Who came up with that number? Like, okay, more than a dollar, less than a million, 950. That sounds good. Okay, that's the number. Like, who
New
came
York,
up with
that? New York, it's 2,000.
Okay, see? Wow. And
my friend works for Target, and he was telling me, like, he just became a security guard there. Basically, until they steal $2,000, all they can ask is politely and say, hey, please leave the store. The exit is that way. The exit is that way. Those are literally the catchphrases they've been taught. And if they get assaulted, they're not allowed to fight back. They can only like use like defensive maneuvers where they like, for example, they get punched, right? Like there's a punch coming. So what they have to do is they have to get closer, right? Like in a wrestling stance, like basically hug the body of the other person so as to avoid the punch. But then they're not allowed to wrestle. So once they've hugged that, the person, they need to get away. It's like, well, what are you, they're trying to cure it with love? Like, what the fuck are people doing?
Yeah, you'd get shot here by the shop owner and probably by about two bystanders if you pulled that.
Well, I mean, not only that, but I mean, it's been that way in Texas for so long. I remember one of my dad's favorite barbecue joints. I don't remember the name of it. But the guy that ran the barbecue joint would walk around with a gun strapped to his hip. And that was like before it was a big deal around here that you see so many CHLs or whatever. And yeah, like he says, I mean, that there are certain places you just don't rob because you know 99 times out of 100, somebody in that place has a gun.
Oh, yeah. Well, you wouldn't around anywhere around here. You would not go into a store and try and rob it. I mean, even if you had a gun, because you know the chances of you being met by more than one gun or a bigger gun.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty huge. So you generally have to have mental issues before you rob somebody here. It's not about being opportunist or...
You never hear about armed robberies in Texas. Never. Mm-hmm. Never.
That's the thing. But it's, you know, it's like... The problem with Texas to a New Yorker who's never experienced it is it takes a giant leap of faith, right? Like I'm an immigrant. So in some weird way, I've been like kind of looking forward to this. And when I came to New York, I was like, that's not America, right? Cause like my idea of New York, of the USA is like the cowboys, right? So like to me, Texas is like, oh, okay. So this is what I want to try. I'm here to try the great American experiment. So let's go to Texas. Right. But let's say you've been born in New York and because you're not an immigrant or because of, you know, the way you were raised, you don't necessarily have this like fantasy of what it means to be free and, you know, like this like paradigm. And so it's a giant leap of faith. It's like with COVID, right? Like until you take your mask off for a week and see that nothing happens to you and that you are completely fine until you've like experienced it. If all you do is just watch the mainstream news and you keep wearing your mask, then you have no way of knowing that it is actually okay, because you need that giant leap of faith to be like, okay, I'm not going to watch the news for a week. I'm going to take off my mask and see for myself what happens. And then if you did that, you would be like, oh yeah, this is great. Same thing with Texas, right? If you, like, oh my God, they all have guns. That's so scary. Go for a week in Texas, right? And be like, I didn't see anybody get shot. Wow. This is not that bad. Right. But like you need the leap of faith. And if you've been kind of programmed to be like, oh my God, Texans are racist too. On top of that, then it's like, well, then you don't want to live there. Right. But I think there's like, you just need to kind of trust your gut and try things instead of just being like, oh no, it's so dangerous. Ooh.
And that's the strangest thing about that.
Yeah, but didn't I bring up the stock show? Like that when I took the kids to the stock show here a few months ago?
I can't remember.
I don't remember if I brought it up on the podcast or not, but I took my kids and the wife to the stock show. And I mean, that is like what you as a New Yorker would consider old school Texan. I mean, you show animals. It's all about, you know, buying cowboy boots and cowboy hats and listening to country music. I mean, it is stereotypical Texan. And my wife said, as we were getting out of the car, you know, walking into the place, she said, I wonder how many guns we're going to see. And I said, well, what do you mean? She's like, well, you know, the open carry and where we're going, like everybody's just going to be strapped up. And I was like, I bet you don't see one gun outside the cops, of course, just regular folks. Bet you don't see one. Didn't see a single one. Mm. Didn't see a single cowboy-looking dude walking around strapped.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, one of the biggest misconceptions, not generally about the South, because I haven't spent much time in some other southern states, but for Texas, you know, the whole thing about Texans are racist and all that, I think we probably have the least problem with racial crime and instances in pretty much the whole country. I mean, nobody thinks, oh my goodness, that's a black community. Oh my goodness, there's some black people. There's, you know, a lot of Hispanics. Nobody even, it doesn't even cross your mind. Not one day passes by where I think about race. And I mean,
I'm going to disagree, because when I want good Mexican food,
I want to
go to the Mexican part of town where the good restaurants are that are ran by Mexican people.
Yeah.
So outside of food, I agree with you, but there are some stereotypes, and you've got to go to the good Mexican places. Like you've got to find that guy with the beat up truck, not the fancy food truck with the cool paint job on the side. Mm. No, you want the one that's a little bit rusty. Mm. You know, they've taped a sign to the side.
Yeah,
that's the good food trucks.
And that's the thing. I mean, you know, there's this assumption that Texans don't want, you know, Mexicans and Hispanics coming through the southern border. Again, that couldn't be further from the truth. We just don't want criminals, regardless of where they're from. It doesn't matter if they're all Swedish neo-Nazis and as white that they'll burn to death in the Texas sun within 5 minutes. We just don't want criminals. We don't care if they're Hispanic. We don't care if they're black. We don't care where they come from. If they're nice and they fit into society by, you know, just following everyday lives, we're fine. I mean, I mean, need, like, he's married to a Mexican. He's married to a Mexican.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's ridiculous, this assertion that, you know, Texans are racist. You know, we just take people as we find them. If they're nice people, they're nice people. You can be white and an absolute piece of shit. I mean, there's no rule on what makes a good person. Oh, yeah.
There are many white pieces of shit.
Yeah, but it's just hilarious how they try and portray us as all being racist. But this is the one area I've lived in my life where nobody seems to give a crap about it. It's never mentioned in our local news.
Yeah, because it's a big marketing campaign. You know, you have to hit Texas on something because otherwise everyone's going to want to move there, right?
That's the problem.
Yeah.
There's no advantage of living in New York right now. If you think about it, like, purely rationally, apart from a bit of the charm, honestly, I was thinking about this before we got on the show. New York is kind of like a very sexy but crazy lady, you know? So like, it's fun to spend 2 weeks with her, but anything past that, you're just like, you're a jackass for staying. I kind of feel the same way. You know, it's like fun. Yeah, it's cool. You can party and there's like a grungy sort of like hip hop-ish, like, ooh, this is cool, like subculture element to it. But it's all bullshit. Like, people there are not happy. It's, everything is expensive. And honestly, you're living in a slum paying like crazy amounts of money. And yeah, it's subculture. Oh, it's cool. But honestly, it's so fake. Like I've been to a few like influencer parties, like, you know, like the elite of New York, like, you know, it's very New York parties, but like the cool ones. And it is the lamest shit I've ever been to. Everyone there is taking pictures of themselves. It's like the most egocentric thing. Everyone's just talking to their small clique, taking pictures of themselves. And it's like, oh, wow, the fashion world of New York is not that cool. Like, it portrays itself as being cool, but it's not. The financial world of New York is lame. Everything's expensive. Like, you know what I mean? It's not that cool of a city.
Yeah.
It's just hard to see it.
I used to really enjoy going in, though, you know, when I lived, you know, in Connecticut. I loved going into Manhattan.
But I think I kind of see his point. It's like, it's a good place to visit, not a good place to live.
Well, I'm not sure it's a good place to visit anymore, barely.
Well, but like you said, I mean, if you stay around like touristy parts, you're okay. And I feel the same way when I go out to LA. When I've been to California, it's like I get off the plane, I'm like, oh man, the weather's nice. I see why so many people want to live here, this, that, and the other. And about 30 minutes later, it is about the amount of time that it takes me to realize, oh, this is why I hate LA. This is why I hate California. Just interacting with people and then the looking around and you see the tents on the sidewalks and all that, which is why I won't go to San Francisco.
And it's really a shame. It's really a shame because there's so much, like, the people there are pretty cool. New Yorkers are cool. Like, New Yorkers have a cool attitude. And if you let them be, I think they're like awesome people. There's some really awesome people in New York. There's a lot of potential for entrepreneurship and stuff, but it's kind of restrained by politicians that don't let it be what it could be and like flourish truly. Everything is so controlled. And it's too bad because it's an awesome city. Like, every time I go there, I'm like, oh, there's really something special about New York. Like, even if I move to Texas, I think I'll always kind of have like a very soft spot for New York. But that being said, it's not living up to its potential. And it's just sad that, you know, like, there's so much trash, just that. It's like, there is so much trash. People don't care about their city because nobody cleans up after it. So if there's already trash lying on the floor, why wouldn't you also throw your own trash? You know, and it's like, nobody's like the sanitation department's not doing anything. So then people keep dumping and, you know, it's like, it's a sad cycle where there's so much potential, but because of the cycle, it's kind of like a lost cause in some way.
It's so rare to see trash. When's the last time you saw some trash on the street?
I was thinking about that too. And
I can't remember the last piece of trash I saw.
Not only that, but here's something kind of crazy to think about. The trashiest the streets ever usually were in Texas was the cigarette butts.
Right.
And now so few people smoke anymore, and it's not like it's being outlawed or anything like that. It's just kind of going out of favor. Mm. I mean, you don't see that many people even smoking anymore. Mm. And now you can pull up, you know, like, you're taking a left turn, right, and you look down. Used to, you just see cigarette butts all over the place. Now you don't really see them that much anymore. So, like you say, you never see the trash, but now you're not even seeing the cigarette butts laying everywhere.
Unless the wind's blown and actually blown some trash out of somebody's trash receptacle, you just don't see trash. I mean, if I Yeah, but if I was even driving down my road and saw trash, I mean, I'd look out the window at it and be like, what the heck is that?
Right. But think about, like, even on trash day, it's even so rare to see it blowing around. Like you say, the wind picks up or whatever and blows it out of the trash can or whatever. You're like, oh, man, somebody, you know, the lid flew open on the trash can and they lost something. And probably nine times out of ten, you walk over there and you pick it up yourself and put it in your trash can.
And that's also the difference. I mean, if you see somebody's trash can, a lot of Texans will stop and put lids on people's trash because they don't want their own community kind of like that. And I mean, that's,
you guys are so
very much a thing that people will look after their neighbors. You know, they'll text them and say, hey, you know, your trash can's blown over, or, you know, there's some car parked outside your house, or there's something, you know. I mean, people tend to look after each other and watch out for people, and you expect the same in return. You know, you expect people to have your back, even if it's a complete stranger.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I heard. There's also kind of like a community where people are, you know, there's some solidarity. Like, let's try to make this a nice place. Let's try to, you know, care for our neighborhood. Like, now I want to know about this. There's what are the downsides of Texas? Because we talked a little bit about New York, and I'm sure, you know, you have to at least ponder the question. And then, what's the deal with the blue wave in Texas? And is it like, getting
so let's hit these separately. So let's talk about the downsides, because there are some.
Yeah, there are.
Number one, everything is far away. Absolutely everything is far away. So especially like a New Yorker, they don't get it. But we do measure things in time, not distance.
Yeah.
So even the town right next to where we're at is 20 minutes, and it's like 3 miles away. I mean, it feels like 3 miles, but it takes you 20 minutes because of the stoplights and everything. It's not like horrible traffic. It's just everything is far away. So there's no walk out your front door and walk to the grocery store or walk to a restaurant. You have to have a car. You have to drive everywhere. There's really no walking. And even some of the new communities or whatever, they're trying to have that like big city feel, like West 7th Street in Fort Worth. So they've got the town home, the high rises or whatever, and people can walk to like one store and a couple of restaurants, but they still find themselves wanting to drive somewhere. So that experiment horribly failed as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
That's like the biggest downside is everything's far away.
Yeah. And when I first moved here, I mean, moving from England, I mean, we used to walk everywhere in England or use public transport. I mean, you'd use your car obviously to go to faraway places, but you know, I used to like going out for a walk. And so when I first moved to Texas, I'd go out for a walk, and for about the first month, I'd have people just stop and say, are you okay? Do you need a ride somewhere? And like police cars would stop and go, is everything okay, sir? But yeah, just out for a walk. So I learned, if you can go out for a walk, put on some workout clothes, because then people will assume you're going out to walk for exercise.
That's true.
So if they see you in regular clothes and walk in, you're going to have to stop every quarter of a mile
They think you broke down or something like that. But no, that is true. And in what you just said, for somebody, you know, in New York or something, lack of public transportation around here. It's essentially non-existent.
Yeah. I mean, we do have a train system and a bus system, but they go to like about three or four spots each. So you want to go somewhere very specific before you use public transport. It's not just a drop me off here and pick me up later. It's,
right. Yeah. That, I mean, if you want to use public transportation, Texas is not the place to do that.
Now, the summers, you could say that's a downside. I mean, compared to the New York winters, probably not so much. If I had to switch the two, I'd take the hot summers. But yeah, there's some years where the months are just unbearable. I mean, my very first summer in Texas, 2000, it was 93 or 94 days in a row where it was over 100 degrees. You'd wake up in the morning and it was like 98 degrees in the shade. And it got up. Actually, my first day in Texas, so it's 116 degrees on the tarmac.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when I stepped off the plane, and it was like, what have I done? Because it hits you in the face like a wet washcloth, you know, if you're not used to it.
A hot, wet washcloth.
Yeah. And it's not
super humid, right?
No, it's not really humid. If you go down to Houston, San Antonio, you may as well just like douse yourself in water before you leave, just to keep yourself cool, because you can walk down the street and just be wet, just without sweating.
Yeah,
it's, you know, like Florida. It just clings to your skin. But so, I mean, yeah, the summers can sometimes suck.
Yeah. And I guess one thing, people up north, a lot of houses don't have air conditioning. And so mm-hmm. to get shocked, I mean, air conditioning is an absolute necessity down here.
Yeah.
There, you don't have a house without AC. Mm. You can't survive.
And temperature drop here is extreme. I mean, it can be like 85 degrees at like 3:30. And before the daylight savings thing, you know, when it got dark at like about 5:30, the temperature might have dropped by like 35, 40 degrees in a couple of hours. And we've had days where we've had like snow, sun, mm-hmm. storms, and a temperature deviation of about 50 degrees all during the same day. But
that's just we Texas. Can see all four seasons in a yeah, day.
But that's just Texas. You're
that's
just
awesome.
Like,
yeah. Well, this morning, when I left this morning, it was 41 degrees outside. Yeah. Today, the high is going to be 70.
Up to, 75.
75. Yeah. So, jeez. I mean, that's
that's
just
crazy.
April 1st, right? Yeah. And you're going to see a 35-degree swing. Mm. And this is not a bizarro day. This is just a normal day. You wear a coat in the morning and, you know, shorts and flip-flops in the afternoon.
And sometimes winter just doesn't happen.
That's true.
Some years it just doesn't come, period. I mean, I've been out swimming in the lake on, like, New Year's Day before, and it'd be, like, about 80-something degrees.
Yeah.
Wow.
It just doesn't arrive sometimes, you know. But sometimes we've missed, like, spring. It's gone like a long winter where it's been mild, and then the next week, it's like 95 degrees or something.
Right.
And there was just no spring. It just went straight into winter. Went from winter to summer.
Yeah. I don't know, though, if you count that as a downside.
Nah, I wouldn't say it's a downside. Well, I guess people who are used to
the changing of the seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of like up in the Northeast, right? Everybody likes the changing of the trees in the fall.
Mm. Like that's very beautiful.
Yeah, there's none of that in Texas.
If you go East Texas, there's a lot of it towards Tyler.
A little bit, but pretty much around here, it's like one day the trees have leaves, and the next day they're all on the ground.
Yeah,
and that's pretty much
because it gets windy, and they just all blow off in one day.
Right, it is like one day.
Yeah,
that's probably the messiest. Anything ever gets is all the leaves.
But even then, I mean, people don't even like leaves on the street. I mean, last time our tree dropped leaves, our neighbor from two houses away happened to be kind of blowing their yard, saw, there's some leaves in their yard, came over, blew all the leaves out of our yard, kind of bagged them up, put them on the side of our...
Yeah.
And we barely ever talk to them. I mean, I'm not sure if I've ever spoken to them more than like once, but like I said, it's just what people do, you know, it's just...
Wow.
A different type of mentality, I think.
Yeah, it's not that's really amazing. Mm-hmm. And that's what I keep hearing. And it just seems like that's really nice. You know, that feels like that's what it's supposed to be. And, you know, and it's doable. Clearly, it's not just a dream. Like, it's not idealistic. If it can happen and if you guys can experience it, then it's real.
Now, the German across the road from me, I'd willingly go and take a shit on his lawn, to be honest. But, you know, for the most part, people are okay. Now,
what's with the German?
He's like a stereotypical Karen. You know, like a busybody. I don't know if he means well or not, but he's one of those people who will call the police for absolutely anything. Like, if there's noise past a certain time, if there's a dog wandering down the street and he can't see the owner,
he's German, he likes order.
Yeah, right. And so, you know, the police kind of like, you'll see the police outside his house, and I think he's just got one number he calls. He's made a friend, and I'm pretty sure the person doesn't even work in the police force in our city, but he just comes out just to reassure him and say, look, it was just a dog, it's just a small dog, it just went for a walk.
You should show him that Ring app. You know, I get those alerts all the time. It's like a strange dog in my yard, and there's like a video of a dog like walking through the yard. It's like, dude, the dog was just walking around having a good time. Like, why did that necessitate an alert on my phone, like strange dog spotted?
Yeah.
And it's just this happy dog, like,
that's
all it was.
But you have to make your mind up if you're going to call the police that you genuinely mean to call the police, because there's no kind of like second thoughts 2 minutes later. Because normally if you call the police within about 90 seconds, there's a squad car coming up, so you can't have any kind of like...
Yeah, because they're so bored.
Yeah, because it's okay, there's nothing going on. You've already got two police cars outside your house. What was the problem? It's like, I saw a cat.
Yeah. No, that is true. I mean, and I guess that's a good thing, but the police, for the most part, are kind of bored. Yeah. So any kind of anything going on, they get excited.
Well, I sent you that photo. There was a... I'd gone to... like I live in a city called Keller, which is right next door to Fort Worth, North Fort Worth. And there are police out there chasing this white rabbit, which had got loose.
Oh, yeah, you did send me the picture of the white rabbit.
Well, I don't even know if it was somebody's pet. Just somebody called the police and said, hey, there's a white rabbit. And so there were police officers, parked a couple of police cars, and the police were trying to catch this white rabbit.
Did I tell you about the bird, the hawk that got zapped on the power line?
No.
Like, so this hawk, Lisa and I were sitting there, we're eating dinner off 377, and all of a sudden we see this flash, and this hawk had somehow hit like a transformer or whatever, zapped it, right? And so the bird falls. We see the whole thing, and I'm thinking, oh man, poor bird or whatever. I'm not kidding you. Minimum of 4 cop cars, 2 fire trucks, and then it's like something else, some other kind of vehicle, like a like the road repair vehicle, whatever you call those guys. Like 7 vehicles are parked out there because the bird fell down. Then it was in the newspaper. Remember? Remember that article about the bird in the newspaper? Well, we saw that, right? Front page news because of this bird, and the bird survived. Like the fire department rushed the bird to the vet, and the bird survived. That was like a so big cute. News story here. Yeah.
Now, would Texas you consider so cute?
Would you consider like such a would you consider moving somewhere different to New York after you finish your college and stuff? Or?
Yeah, I'm actually thinking. I'm not even kidding. I'm thinking about, like, my parents are thinking about Dallas, Texas. I want to stay in New York because I do love the city and I do have a job there for now. But eventually, yeah, I'd be super interested in moving to Dallas or, you know, yeah, something like that.
All right, it now looks,
it looks cool. Ahead. It looks like a different. It's something I want to try. Right, I want to at least see maybe I won't like it. I'm open to that, but I think I will. Right, as an immigrant. I came here because they said, yeah, it's like a totally different way of life, right? Like people are really empowered and they're trusted to be smart with that power they're given, right? I mean, you're giving tremendous power. You're given the right to have a gun. You're given the right to do anything you want. And the experiment is like, hey, if you empower people, they're actually good, right? And so I'm like super interested in trying it out. I love New York and I love the culture, but there's an aspect of it where it's not like that at all. Like it's all about restrictions and you're allowed to do this, you're not allowed to do that. And I want to try a place where humans can be empowered and see what it does. So I would definitely want to try at least for a year. And then if I love it, stay.
It kind of going to your second question, the whole blue wave thing. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that here in a second, but it kind of reminded me of that Joe Rogan thing. And this was long before Joe Rogan even moved to Texas. He had some joke about Texas's rule book is like 4 pages long or whatever. It's like that kind of is true. I mean, there's very few laws. But on the blue wave thing, I think, yes, there is like this blue wave that's happening. And the only reason is because for so long, Texas has been so red, except for Austin. Most people just don't bother voting. You know, if it's an election, they're like, why should I bother going to vote? Whoever the Republican is going to win. I'd rather, you know, sit at home and watch something or, you know, put some barbecue on the grill, something like that. Why should I even bother going to vote? But now Texans are seeing, oh man, everybody that's going to vote, like Democrats are probably showing up 98-99% voter turnout, and Republicans are still like 50% or 60%. And so now all of a sudden people are showing up to vote. In this last election, the Republican primary or whatever, like there was a ton of people voting.
Yeah.
Like that's the one thing that's changing. It's like everybody that, and I, by the way, I'm guilty of it. I hadn't voted until this last election. It'd probably been 16 years since I'd voted. People just weren't voting in Texas. And now they're waking up and saying, okay, we can't just sit around and be lazy. Now we're actually going to have to go vote.
Well, it kind of pissed on their projections because, you know, after the 2016 election, you know, there was all these, I guess, predictions of a blue wave or Texas turning purple. And then once that kind of word got out in the last election, I think it was the largest win by Republicans in goodness knows how many decades because people were like, yeah, we don't want any of that crap, so we'll go out and vote. And all of a sudden, that blue wave was kind of like completely extinguished. So when it comes down to per head of population in Texas, you know, they're not going to, if you tell them, look, you need to go out and vote because of this. People will go out and vote. But when the margin was like 25 to 30 points, yeah, like you said, half of the people weren't going to bother going out and voting because it's you always knew who was going to win.
And I'm wondering, like, the Democrats, because I guess a blue wave by itself is not like a big deal, right? It's just a color. Like, it's more like, what kind of Democrat? Is it like a, you know, and are people turned on by social justice, like warrior, like cancel culture? That's really my beef is with, like,
not outside of Austin. Outside of Austin, I wouldn't say so. And also, I think Texas Democrats, I mean, Texas Democrats around here, you'd probably call those New York Republicans because they're fiscally,
that's a good point.
They're fiscally conservative. You know, they want to live in a nice house. They want to have law and order, but they can afford these little kind of sideshows of alternate views to the mainstream views in Texas because then they know that if these things got through, they're going to be implemented in a way which isn't going to be chaotic. Whereas a lot of the laws which get passed in some Democratic cities, they have no real plan how to cope with, you know, if things go wrong. They don't necessarily have the budget for it. You know, here in Texas, I mean, you know, we balance our budgets in our constitution. We have to have a balanced budget. You know, people from California always boast something like, oh, we have the seventh or eighth largest economy in the world. It's like,
oh, they say fifth now.
Yeah. But it's like, yeah, but you're broke. You got no money. You're no different than a billionaire.
You're no different than the United States.
Yeah, exactly. Who's a dollar in debt. You know, this guy over here who's living on the street who has $5 in his pocket has more money than you have because you're in debt. And that's one thing with Texas. You know, I mean, we don't go into debt. So if we have a plan to do something, we're going to have the budget to do it. We're not, it might take a long time. I mean, certainly with our road system around here, it takes us forever to build roads and stuff, but we never have projects go by the wayside because we have a lack of funding. You know, we always make the money for it. And like I said, it's in our constitution that we don't go into a deficit and we're self-sustaining in that area. If we can just sort the power grid out so it works like it's supposed to most of the year.
We did pretty good in fixing that because when we had all the power outages or whatever, and I know that made national news, no Texan, I shouldn't say no, but most Texans didn't know that the board of ERCOT were made up by a bunch of non-Texans. And so we all got real pissed about that. And we're like, we need to fix that. Well, that's been fixed now.
Yeah.
So, but nobody knew. Yeah. We're all sitting around fat, dumb, and happy because everything's going well, and we just figured somebody somewhere else has got that taken care of. Yeah, and I guess that's kind of the attitude of Texas. We just figure, like he said, everybody kind of takes care of everybody else, so certain things you just say, somebody's got that. And most of the time, somebody's got that.
That's
right?
The danger, I guess, right?
That's danger of... It certainly is. And I mean, right now, the big news story around it, as we're joking about news stories, as I guess good as we have it in Texas, is the library books. Mm. You know, in certain, you know, bad books in the library or whatever, that's like huge news around here. It's like women, mothers fighting school boards about the books in the kids' libraries. That's
why,
like, that's like the biggest thing that they have to worry about right now.
Well, we do still have some form of an obscenity law in Texas, which means you can't, in front of minors, whether it be broadcast media or printed media, put stuff which is, I can't really think of the word, but something which kind of either subverts or does something, anything which is kind of like seen as unsuitable. And it's not supposed to be a suppression of a freedom of speech. It's just that you don't want in
an decency is the word you're looking
probably,
for.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, like, you don't want in an elementary school library, you know, a guide to anal sex. You know, that's not about freedom of speech.
Yeah, and no, I get you.
You know, it's the same thing going on in Florida at the moment and how that's misrepresented. I don't think anybody can honestly say, look, we want kindergartners to have access to this book about gay anal sex because that's freedom of speech and allowing people, you know, access to, you know, materials, which is just, you know, normal human biological behavior. But it's like, do you really feel comfortable having your kid, you know, ask, daddy, why is that man putting his penis in that other man's bum? It's not about being anti-gay. I don't want straight sex talk to a kindergartner. It's got nothing to do with anti-gay, and yet everybody, you know, with these other agendas, say, oh, it's because you're anti-gay. It's like, no, I'm just anti-sex being taught to small kids, period.
By school, especially. Yeah. Like,
and that's our only argument. Yeah, that's our only argument against it. And if you look at that, at what they've called the don't say gay, because, you know, they've tried to give it a label which makes it sound, you know, anti-homosexual, when in fact it's just about, look, don't inappropriately put sexual materials in front of kids, and teachers shouldn't be sitting down discussing their sex lives, whether they're straight or gay. But of course they just focused on the gay part of it, when reality it's all sexual activity, pornography, straight pornography, anything. They just don't want kids to have access to it. But that the news,
at least it's not like a radical thought. I mean, you know, you could have somebody say, well, actually it would be good for this, but at least it's a debate, right? It's not like I don't buy into that, like, oh, it's all homophobic and it's this and that. It's like, it's such a radical view on what you said, which was completely like any parent would be like, yeah, I don't think, you know, they should have like sexual material at this age. It's such a common thing to say. It's crazy twisting it like that.
That's the problem.
We'd hope it would be common sense.
But as the
not so common.
As the new saying, common sense isn't so common anymore, and that's kind of the problem.
Yeah.
Like, things you wouldn't think about that you would have to mess with, now you have to mess with them.
Yeah.
Like, you just wouldn't think that would have been a problem. Now all of a sudden it's a problem, so now it has to be addressed.
Yeah. And I think one thing as well, I mean, you were talking about the influencer type culture in New York, where everybody feels, you know, they can have an influence on somebody if they post enough, you know, reels on Instagram or, you know, videos on TikTok. But here, for the most part, nobody really cares about what people outside of the state think of them, or even what people within the state think of them. You know, nobody tries to put, well, I mean, some people do, that's a lie. And I mean, especially, there's quite a high society movement in parts of Dallas, you know, people with a lot of money. But for the most part, nobody really cares. I mean, they don't care if somebody's wearing something differently. I mean, if you look like a freak show, of course people are going to look. That's human nature. And by that, I mean, like, if you're wearing something ridiculous, you know, I mean, like, if Max suddenly turned up wearing a dress, I'd be like, dude, why are you wearing a freaking dress? That's not abusing his rights. That's a genuine question as to why the heck are you wearing a dress today? And if he said, well, you know, the dog shit all over my clean clothes, I'd be like, all right, just don't. Yeah, I just hope you're wearing underwear if you can open your legs there.
That's all I had today. So, you know.
Yeah, but nobody gives a crap. And that's the thing. They try and make out that Texans, you know, are so homophobic, they're so racist. But the truth is, nobody gives a crap. Just live your own life. As long as you don't try and push your views in my face to how it changes my day-to-day life, and you try and force me to wear a dress, or try and force me to teach my child about anal sex, you can do whatever you want. Nobody cares.
Yeah, that's what freedom's about. It's not. Yeah. Well, that's what they don't. And I wonder sometimes if it's because people don't want you to be right, or if it's because they can't even comprehend it because they're so used to like their way of thinking, which is kind of authoritarian without realizing it, that they think that therefore you must also be authoritarian, and that's how you function, and therefore that's how they see your behavior. Like, I don't know if they're twisting it intentionally for political reasons, or if there's just like a level of like, it's so foreign to them, the idea that you could actually genuinely not care and be free and let other people be free, that it's like so confusing to them that maybe that's why they're fighting it. I don't know. I don't know if like they just don't get it.
Yeah, I think Joe Rogan gave a good example. And this wasn't even within the last year before he was affected by any type of, you know, overt criticism or cancel culture. And he said that, you know, today's liberals, you know, are very different from liberals 20 years ago. Probably 20 years ago, we would have probably just self-described ourselves as somewhat liberal in certain, you know, social issues or whatever. But today's liberal, you know, almost comes with cancel culture in the box. It's like if you buy a G.I. Joe and you get some accessories with it, it's like cancel culture comes in the box with today's liberal. And he said, you know, if a liberal watches a show and doesn't like it, he wants it banned for everybody. If a Republican watches the show and doesn't like it, he doesn't watch it.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that's our thing. All right. If you don't like it, don't do it. You know, but I don't, just because I don't like something, I don't want it banned for everybody else because I find it offensive. You know, so cancel culture hasn't got very far in Texas because, you know, people will just give you the middle finger if you tell them what they can and can't do and what they can and can't watch or listen to.
Yeah, we'll figure out a way to do it.
Do you guys know the comedian Andrew Schultz?
I've heard the name. I don't know anything by him.
He's super, he's funny. He's super like anti-cancel culture. And I went to a comedy club recently in New York and he was there. And you know, and that's where you realize what cancel culture is. You know, you would say, because I a little bit disagree with you where it's like liberal and Republican. I think it's more, it's very extreme. I don't think it's every liberal. I think they're just people who kind of get like, okay, I guess that's how it is now. So they go along with it. Mm. Because at the comedy show, this guy, Andrew Schultz, I mean, he was fucking provocative, like very provocative. And people are like looking around, like not sure if they can laugh, you know, and then they start laughing a little bit. And by the end of it, you had like all the New Yorkers except three, and I'm serious, laughing their ass off. And part of it goes to the credit of Andrew Schultz, who's just really good to flip a room around like that. But I mean, the beginning was dead silent. And it's because people are kind of scared to laugh. Like, is it okay? Is it not okay? You know, oh, I, you know, HR said that's not good, so I'm not going to laugh, right? But like, genuinely speaking, people are, that's what I'm saying. Like, people are not that radical. It's just they're kind of like, well, I guess this, you know, I want to be a good guy, right? So like they don't really know. And my point is like it's not, I just think people need more courage. Like it's kind of, it's like it's mediocre. It's not just bad, it's also kind of mediocre where people are like, well, I guess I'm not going to think for myself, I don't want to be a bad guy, and I'm not going to think for myself whether what he's doing is bad, I'm just going to assume it is because no one else is laughing. And that, you know, and that's kind of my problem. It's like cancel culture is just it's pervaded by very few people, but everyone else just kind of aligns around with it because they're a little bit too scared to do anything about it, you know?
Yeah, and I do think on both sides there is that 15-20% who kind of ruin it for the others. I mean, if you did take the country as an even split 50-50, that 15% extreme going towards the extreme, because you obviously don't have a clear cutoff line, but that 15% on either side just kind of ruin it, because you've got people on the very far right who are maniacs and you've got people on the very far left who are maniacs. But the news cycle obviously has to concentrate on the maniacs, you know, and not that 70% of people, you know, in that middle chunk who, like you said, they do have more in common than they have differences. But unfortunately now environment plays such a strong factor in that some cities, some states almost aren't allowed to think for themselves and take personal responsibilities. They get those taken away from them. And eventually you mold people into this type of kind of prisoner mindset. Mm-hmm. And they believe, regardless of what it says in the Constitution, that they don't have the right to free speech. They don't have the right to bear arms. And then that starts spreading to the other amendments. Oh, maybe I don't have absolute right on my property, unreasonable searches and all this stuff. And they start doubting everything about the Constitution and their rights as an American. And then they start following, you know, unelected leaders or spokespeople like, you know, Dr. Fauci, who says, oh, I recommend that nobody gets together for Thanksgiving or Christmas unless you've all been triple vaccinated, you're wearing 9 masks and you're having it by Zoom. You know, and some people be like, well, he's the expert, I'm going to follow it, because they're taught not to question authority. Here, your first thing is you question authority. It doesn't even matter if it's people who are representing you and it's Republicans. I mean, I dislike as many Republican politicians as I do Democratic ones. I don't have this tribal allegiance to the Republicans because a lot of them are assholes as well.
Yeah.
You know, they're fake and they're just there to pick up their paycheck and they don't really get anything done. And when push comes to shove on sensitive issues, they either don't vote or they keep the mouth shut. But it's that 15% on either side who screw it up. But that's where all the money is in media and blowing up all these weirdos to make it seem like it is normality, when everyday life, everyday people, that's not normality.
I know culture doesn't change that fast. Like genuinely, you know, like on the surface it does, but if you think about it, are you really that different than your parents or than your grandparents? No. Right. So like, how could you have changed your opinion so much when nothing really changed? You were influenced. That's why you didn't just lose your common sense. You let it go.
There you go. Well, with that said, AJ, tell everybody how they can find out more about you, your podcast, all that good stuff as we kind of wrap things up.
So it's the AJ Podcast. It's on Instagram and at Real AJ Podcast. So you can find it there and then you can click on the link and it'll take you. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, pretty much everything.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Well, great. Hey, thanks for joining us again. We appreciate it. Always good to hear from you. And that will do it for this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd. And we will catch you on the next one.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd podcast. If you like what you just heard, we hope you'll pass along our web address, thewolfandtheshepherd.com, to your friends and colleagues. And please leave us a positive review on iTunes when you get a chance. Check us out on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for additional content. Join us next time for another episode of The Wolf and the Shepherd.